Kufman Beis Amid Beis, and we're up to the Mishnah, which is line 5, and we're going to deal further with taking something that's not mixed mukta, and with it, along with it, something that's mukta, as we discussed in the last year with regard to a child who's holding on to an evan, or if he has peros and an evan inside a sal. The Mishnah says, "Ha'evan she." Let's add the word "munachas al pi ha'chavis." Now he wants to get access to the contents of the barrel, but there's a stone that's sitting on top of the barrel. So how does he get the wine out of the barrel? He's not allowed to pick up the evan with his hands because the evan is mukt. But mata, he's allowed to tip over the chavis al tzida on its side, for he and the evan no fellas. Let's say it's not a convenient possibility for him to tip over the barrel and allow the stone to fall because it's going to hit the barrel that's next to it and it'll destroy it, it'll break it. His option is, he can lift up the chavis with the stone on top of it, take it away from the congregation, the assembly of the other chavios, the other barrels, and then matal tzida, the hinofels. Then, when it's at a distance, away from the other chavios, then he can tip over the chavis and the stone will fall. Mos shemunochos al hakar. So we have discussed this in the past. He's got coins that are sitting on a pillow. He wants to use the pillow. And the coins are mukta minayra esakar. He can shake off the pillow, vehein, and these mos, noflos, they will fall to the side. The obvious question is, what's the need for the Mishnah to add this case of kar above and beyond the first case of the evan? They seem to be identical. Now, the difference might be between an evan and a mos, and we'll talk about that belineder later on. Hoisa olav, on this pillow he has lashleshes. Lashleshes is a general term for something that's repugnant, that's repulsive. It could be he's got excrements, he may have spit. Is mekalcha, he's allowed to take off the lashleshes bismartut with a piece of garment that's already been sort of taken out of service, if you know what I mean. But he shouldn't put water on top of the lashleshes, because once you put water on a cloth that is filthy, that's called kibus. So even adding water is prohibited. But haisa, if this lashleshes was made of leather, I'm sorry, if the lashleshes was on a kar, a pillow that was made of leather, I just wanted to see if you were paying attention, is nosnim oleh, he puts on top lashleshes mayim, water on top of this kind of filth that's on top of leather, that's not kibus, ad shetichle, and that's not considered kibus. So he gets rid of the lashleshes with the water on top of the leather. Okay, the Gemara now is going to analyze the case where he has a stone on top of a barrel, and the Mishnah allows him to tip over the barrel, and the stone will fall. When is this heter, this relaxation of the laws of mukts applicable? That's only al b'shocheach. He did not deliberately put the stone on top of the barrel, before Shabbos. But you know what? He forgot about it. He didn't know exactly where to put the stone down. He put it up on top of the barrel. And in the meantime, he forgot about taking off the stone before Shabbos. This happens to all of us all the time. We put things down that are mukta, so we don't remember to take it away before Shabbos. Avol b'meiniach, meaning midas, if he deliberately placed the stone on top of the barrel, perhaps it's covering the barrel. Nase bosses ledover oser. It's not just that he forgot about the stone. He had a deliberate intention that the stone should be sitting on the barrel, in which case the barrel becomes what's called a bosses, and you're not allowed to tip over this barrel that has a stone on it, because the barrel itself now is muktzah insofar as it's a bosses, meaning had it not been a bosses, then it's not muktzah, it's a kli and it's not muktzah. And in order to get rid of the stone, you're allowed to tip over that which is not muktzah, because you're not coming in direct contact with muktzah. You're only moving something that's non-muktzah. But the problem is that if this barrel is deliberately designated to hold on to the stone, or the stone is deliberately placed on the barrel, then what we have is a bosses, and the barrel itself becomes muktzah. The Mishnah says that if this chavis is located amongst other chavios, and he's afraid to tip it over, because if the stone falls off, it might break one of the other barrels. So he's allowed to lift up the barrel, we saw. He can take it away from the other barrels, and then tip it over on the side so the oven falls out. The Gemara now wants to clarify which Tana has taught this halacha. Man Tana, the kol hecha de ika yisura vehetera, so here's the principle that is reflected in our Mishnah, and we're going to try to find the Tana who actually formulates this principle, and that is that if he has in front of him a Dover Asur and a Dover Mutter, then he's allowed to be Matriach himself and move, be Metaltel the Heter, and he's not going to be Metaltel. He's not going to be matriach himself to be metalta li isur. And therefore you can tip over the chavis with the stone. And we're not telling you to take the stone on its own with your hands directly. Even though he's doing it indirectly by tipping over the barrel, in essence, even so, he's being metaltil the chavis, and that could have been considered being metaltel the evan on the chavis, but no, we have this principle of batera tarchinon. He's allowed to exercise his energy for the heter, even though essentially he's doing the same thing as if he would have exercised his tircha on the isur. And we had something similar earlier in the case that we mentioned of some father he's carrying his son, who in turn is holding on to an evan, and there too we say that he's really carrying the ben, he's not carrying the evan, and he's toreach bedover heter and not bedover isur. The Chafetz Hashem, one of the Achronim, writes the following: Kasher yesh ochel bedover muktza Ubola Hasiro Kadeshet Litakinis Ochel. He really wants to get to the food, but he can't do so unless he takes away Muktza. Then Lo Gazru Bomishum Tiltul Muktza. Here too, the Evan is Alpia Chavis. He cannot get access to the wine because of the Evan. If the Evan, which is Muktza, is being Ma'akiv, in other words, it's preventing him, it's a barrier of preventing him. So in such a case, there's not really an isur to be metaltel the evan and remove it. And the Mishnah, when it requires that you tip over the chavis instead of directly picking up the stone with your hands, that's because since he can do a tiltel beheter and accomplish his goal, circumventing the need to be metaltel the chavis directly, the isur, the muktzah, they're not going to allow him to be metal to the muktza biyadai. So who is the Tana that holds this shita? The Gemara answers, Amar Barbachan, Amar Rav Yochanan, Rav Shimon Gamliel. He, the Tana who authored that Mishnah, is none other than Rav Shimon Gamliel, who says that according to Beis Hillel, we can allow moving and being matriach oneself with the heter for the purpose of the Issa Disnan. We have a Mishnah Masechta Beitza, Ha Borer Kitnios Biyantif. he's got legumes, and they're mixed up with all sorts of psoles, different parts that he wants to get rid of. And he's doing, in effect, a selection, which is a borer, Beit Shammai Omrim, borer ochel v'ochel. He's allowed only to remove the kidneys from the psoles and eat the kidneys, and the psoles has to remain behind. Ubeis Hill Omrim, he's not obligated to do so, but borer kidarko. If it's easier for him, and that's the normal way of doing it, to take out the psoles, and the ochel will remain behind in the utensil, then that's fine. However, there's one limitation and one prohibition that even Beis Hillel accepts, and that is that it's got to be b'cheko uvetamchui. He's not allowed to do the selection unless he has a talis, we'll call it, which is open, which is porus alcheiko. And basically what Beis Hillel is saying is, I'm going to allow you to take the iser, meaning the psoles, from the ochel in order to be mesaken, but I am going to require certain strict conditions that have to be felt, have to be met, and we're going to be mata you to be borer the psoles mitocha ochel under these conditions. And this is only on Yontif. This is a Mishnah in Beitza. On Yontif we have the Heter Vochel Nefesh. On Shabbos this would be Borer Psoles Mitoch Ochel, which is certainly prohibited. Fine. So we have this kind of a Borer in which we're allowing him to do work with the borer selection process, but on the condition that he is using his lap, that's cheko, or tamchui. Tamchui is a large plate. So he has a sheet on his lap, he spreads it out, he creates a wide surface on his lap, then he spreads out the mixture, and then he tilts the sheet in such a way that the legumes, the round peas and so forth, will roll away from the impurities. Or, in the case of a tamchui, he spreads the mixture over a wide plate, and then gently shakes the plate at a slight angle, in such a way that the legumes or the peas will roll to the lower end. So Beis Hillel basically on Matir Borer on Yontif, because it's Ochel Nefesh. But a person, although he's allowed to select the impurities from the Ochel, from the food, he is only allowed to use these utensils that Beis Hillel mentioned. If let's say he wants to use a sieve, so Beis Hillel would prohibit it. He's asid because that would be a utensil that's normally used to separate quantities of psoles impurities from ochel, from the food. Now, as far as muktz is concerned, they still have another kula over here, and the law of muktz does not aser him from handling the impurities. You might think that touching the psoles is itself a violation of the tilt of mukta. And apparently the answer is that if he gets rid of the mukta, which is a barrier that prevents him or inhibits him from enjoying a food item, that's considered a malach that's done in the food, not in the impurities that he took, in the psoles that he took away. So he's not taking the mukta, but rather he is rectifying or protecting the food or improving the food. And that you're allowed to do on Yontif. Now, Beis Hillel, apparently, according to this Mishnah, allows you to take out the psoles from this taroves, even if the psoles is rove, there's a greater quantity of psoles than there is ochel. And there's no preference here for handling the mukta, the non-mukta. Either way, Beis Hillel allows it so you can take the muktzah, take the psolus from the ochel. Okay. Now, after, one second, after quoting Basil Bora Kidarko, the Mishnah now quotes Rab Shimon Gamliel. Not the Mishnah, but a Brice. Tanya, we learned that in Brice, Omer, Rab Shimon Gamliel, Bamedvar, Murim, when does Basil allow you to take the psolus from the Ochel? That's only Shaochel Merubal Psolus. That is considered normal to take the psolus because most of what you have here is ochel. So you don't want to bother with the rov ochel. You want to minimize your tircha by just taking out the miut psolus. Avol, but in the opposite case, that the psolus would be meruba ala ochel, and there's more tircha to take out the psolus. Is Divrei HaKol, even Beis Hillel would agree that borer ochel mitok psolus. He's going to have to take out the ochel in order to reduce the tircha. That's the case of psolus merubala ochel. So again, since he can select the ochel, and he's allowed to be metalto the ochel, and it adds nothing to his tircha element, they weren't matir him, even Beis Hillel, in this case, to select the psolus, which is muktzah. And in our Mishnah also, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel would hold that if there's a tircha to be metalto the chavis, which is heter, and if he could do so in a way that he's not metal to the Evan, which is muktzah, that's what we want him to do. We want him to be Torah with the Heter, which in this case is the Chavis, so be metal to the Chavis, and not be Torah with the Evan, which is muktzah. That's called Batera Tarchina Bisura Lo Tarchina. So Gemara asks the following kashva hocha. Here in our Mishnah, when there's an evan that covers the opening of a chavis, dechi ochel merubal apsolus dami, we should find an analogy here to ochel merubal apsolus. And Rav Shimon Gamliel said that he could take the psolus even though it's muktzah, because the tilt of the ochel increases his tircha variable. Here too, there's a tircha meruba yoser binatilas hachovis min ha'evan. Do you follow? There's a greater tircha element in picking up the chovis with the stone on it. Alternatively, if he just took off the stone, that would make life so much easier for him. So why shouldn't he take off the stone in the same way that Rav Shimon Gamliel allowed you to take out the psoles, even though it's muktzah, because since the ochel's merubal psoles, it saves him and reduces his tirch element by taking away the psoles. And here, he should be taking away the evan to minimize his tircha, so he doesn't have to schlep the whole barrel with the evan and then push off the evan, push the evan over the cliff, but rather just let him pick up the Evan, put it down, take it off the Chavis, and get access to the wine in the Chavis. That would seem to be the easiest, most comfortable way with a miut of Tircha. And we've already seen that Rav Shimon Gamliel votes in favor of minimizing Tircha, even if it means moving Muktza, which is Psolus. So the Gemara says, Hachinami. Our Mishnah would also agree with this conclusion. Kevin di boy le mishkal lo mishtakel le yayin ad deshakel la evan. In other words, if he wants to empty the barrel of its wine, and there's wine all the way at the bottom of the barrel, he's going to have to lift up the chavis. He's going to have to lift up the barrel and tip over the barrel in order to empty the wine from the barrel, get access to the wine. And if that be the case, it would seem that the easiest way of him doing this is by lifting up the barrel and tipping it over in a way that the Evan will fall off. Because in any event, that's what he has to do. So the Tircha is a given over here, because otherwise how is he going to get the wine out of the barrel? Therefore, Kipsolos Merubala Ochel Dami, we're going to allow him to do what he can in the most minimum tirchadik way. And that's what we saw in Rav Shimon Gamliel, that in the case where there's more psoles than ochel, will allow him to take the psoles away, leaving over the good stuff behind. And that was the sheet of Rav Shimon Gamliel in the case of psoles mixed in with ochel, right? Let's say, yeah, psoles mixed in with kidneys, whatever the case might be, we're going to look for the most comfortable and minimize the tircha in the best way we possibly can. So here, the Gemara explains, since in any event he's going to be picking up the barrel of wine and tipping it over to get the wine from the bottom of the barrel out, so this is parallel to the case where he's got more psoles and it's easier for him to remove the psoles. And Rav Shimon Gamliel prohibited being metal to the psoles because of tircha. You know, taking the psoles is a tircha meruba. And here too, if he has to schlep the evan, let's assume it's a heavy stone and he's got to do it and pick it up, and anyway, no matter what, afterwards he's going to have to tip over the chavis in order to get access to the wine in the chavis. So there's an extra tircha that we're asking him to take off the evan from the chavis. So basically what's new about this in summary is that in principle you would be allowed for the sake of ochel nefesh to remove the evan directly, but since the evan is muktza, therefore we're looking for a way to balance between tiltul muktza and tircha. And if we come to the conclusion that in any particular scenario the tircha is greater because he's removing the muktza, then we're not going to allow him to remove the psoles. But if on the other hand the easiest way for him, the limitation of tircha, right, the lowest element or level of tircha will be achieved by removing, let's say, the ochel, so then he's going to have to remove the ochel. And if instead of lifting up this evan, which is lying on the top of the barrel, he can simply tip it over, that's going to minimize his tircha. In any event, as we said before, he's going to have to tip over the barrel to empty it of its contents. We learned in the mission that chavis, if he has haisa chavis ben hachavios, then his option is to lift up the barrel with the stone on top. And when he gets at a distance away from the other barrels, then he will tip over the barrel and the stone will fall. Tanya, we have a braisa, Rabbi Yossi, Omer Hoysa, Hechavis, this Chavis which has a stone on top of Munachas, be Otsar Shel Chavios. So you've got an entire storehouse of barrels and you have one barrel that has a stone on it. And he's afraid to tip over the barrel because it'll fall on one of the other barrels in this storehouse and break it. Oh, another alternative scenario is Shahayu Kleis Chuchas Munachim Tachteo, under the chavis he's got fragile glass utensils, and he might break them if the evan will fall. Is Magbia, then we'll allow him to lift up the chavis, to be mesalik the chavis, remove it from here, mokumachet, to another place, and there he's free of all the shackles of the other the neighboring chavios, and therefore he's matal tzida v'inofeles v'notol imenu mashitzorach lo. And then machzira limkoma. So that when he has these other utensils, barrels, or glassware that are in close proximity. So instead of tipping over the barrel with the Evan on it, so the Evan will fall, and he might injure some of the other Kalim, then we're going to tell him that in such a scenario, he should carry the barrel out with the Evan on top of it, and there he'll dispose, he'll know what to do with the Evan. Now, why does the Braisa add those extra two words at the end, machzira limkoma? I mean, again, if he's a nice, clean guy, that's what he should do based on ethics and etiquette. But he writes here that tzarech she'yeh nikar mitoch ma'asav, he's got to make it clear from his actions that his tiltal of the chavis is for the purpose of getting access to the wine. Because only for the access to the wine were they matir him to be metaltal the chavis with the stone on top of it. So immediately, he should take the yayin and return it to his place. And machzir limkoma. That's what he has to do immediately, and that will clearly indicate that he needs the wine, which is the basis of this heter. Moshe al gabi kar, in the case he has coins that are sitting on a pillow, and we allow him to shake off the coins by lifting up the pillow. Omar Rav Chiya bar Ashiya marav lo shanu ela b'shocheach. Once again, we have to worry about the issue of buses, as we did in the case of the Evan al Piachovis here too. If it's shocheach, he forgot the mos on the pillow when he entered into Shabbos. There was no deliberate placement or intention of placement onto the kar for the sake of the mos. And he had no real interest in leaving these coins on top of the pillow. And that's okay. But Amol Meniach, if let's say deliberately place the mos on top of this kar, on top of this pillow, and he intends that it should remain there, is then, if he changes his mind and now he wants to remove, well, certainly he can't remove the mos, but maybe he could tip the kar on its side. No. The kar itself, naseh basis ledavar asur. Now the kar itself becomes mukta, like the mos. Why? Because it's a basis for the mos. And therefore you're not allowed to shake this pillow and remove its mos. Amar Rabbi Bar Chanan Rabbi Yochanan, furthermore, lo shanu. When does this din formulated by a mission apply? That you have to be menar, you have to shake off the kar in order to get the coins off the kar. And then once the coins are off the kar, then you can move the kar. Ella, that only applies to Tzarek Gufo. If he needs the pillow for in and of itself, he wants to sleep on the pillow. Then we're going to allow him just to shake a nior in order to get rid of the mos that are on top of the bedding, and he'll be able to sleep. Aval, if on the other hand he moves Litzarach Shemesh Makomo, he wants to move these mos, and perhaps the car as well, in order to empty that space that's being occupied, free it up for Shemesh Makomo, for use in that place, then Metaltalo V'odon Olav. He's allowed to be metaltal the car, even though the mos are on top of the car. And why? Because it's the Tzorach Makoma. Mitzorach Makoma in that sense goes even beyond the Tzorach Gufo. And since if he would be Menar first and the mos would fall there, he won't be able to use that place, which he wants to vacate for a use. And in such a case, we apply the principle of Metaltalo Ve'odenu Olav. He can actually carry the car with the mos on top of it. And all this reflects the sheet of Rava that we discussed in the previous shiur, that in the case of a klishim alachta le'isur, you're allowed to move it l'tzar gufa l'tzar makoma. V'chein tani chiyah barav difti lo shanu elo l'tzar gufa avo l'tzar makoma metaltalo vodenu olav. In other words, when did the Mishnah require that you have to shake off the mos from the pillow? That's only when he wants to use the pillow l'tzorach gufo. But if he's being metalta l'tzorach makomo, then he's allowed to pick up the car with the mos on it and be metalta it. The Mishnah teaches us mos she'al hakar, if he has money on top of the pillow, he's menar the pillow, and the mos fall off. So the Gemara wants to know, are there other additional scenarios where he could be metaltil mukta im davar she'eno mukta, like the case of the car, which is not mukta, but he's moving with the car the mos, which are mukta. Omer av Oshia Shochach Arniki Bechotzer. He forgot his wallet, his purse, and his mos. And his mos inside the Arniki. And in such a case, we're going to allow him Bechotzer, because there's no Iser Tiltel Mukta in a chutzah. Rosh Hashanah has an Isur Tiltel Arba Amis, and now he's in a chutzah. So Rav Oshia says that Shochach Arniki v'chutzah, the Arniki which has money in it, was left behind in the chutzah. And he cannot now get access to his house, right? Because he left his arniki with Mos in the chotzer, and he cannot. Let's just figure out. It says here, "Eino yochel lachniso lebeiso." L'shomro, right? He wants to get the mos into his house in order to protect them, to protect the mos. Yeah, but the problem is that the mos are mukta. So what do we do in such a case? Meniach olel kikar otinok u'metaltula. He's allowed to place a non-mukta item on top of this kikar, this piece of bread, or on top of a tinok, a boy, a baby boy, or a baby girl, and he's allowed to be metaltali arniki and move it into his house. And this we saw, if you remember, with regard to Otsos mess, that if the mess has to be moved and it's a dover mukta, then he's allowed to do it al yidei tinok v'kikar. So what would be fascinating here is to analyze the scope and define the scope of the heter of kikar o tinok. We see it here in its application to mukta, and that is that if he has an arniki and he's got to find a way of moving it because it's got money in it. He doesn't want to leave it where it is out there in the Hefkevelt. But the problem is that it's mukta. So is there a way of moving a mukta item, in this case an arniki, without violating the halachas of the Isur of Tiltul Mukta? And the Eitzah here is Kikar O Tinok. either takes a loaf of bread or a tinok, and then he could take the arnike and bring it into his house. Amar Rav Yitzchok shachach levena bechotzer. He's got this brick that is blocking his access, his entry to his house, and he wants to, let's say, take this brick into his house in order to protect it, but it's muktzah. His meniach aleh, you can place on top of this brick, kikar otino kumitaltala umachnisa lebesa. He said, then, I'm going to use the same heter again to allow him to take the brick into the house so he could protect the brick. Now, the Gemara adds this statement of Rabbi Yitzchak in Levena, even though the Gemara already quoted Rav Oshia in the case of an Arnak, because Levena does not have the value of an Arnak. It's not such a great hefset. And Rabbi Yitzchak is teaching us that even this very minimum hefset is enough to be mater kikar tinok. Om Rav Yehuda bar Shilo, Om Rav Asi, Pam Achas, Shochachu Diskia. Diskia is a sock shell or. Okay, it's a sack that's made of leather, malea mos, and it's a money bag that's full of money, besratian in a public highway, which certainly connects two cities and has the din of Rishus HaRabim. Ubo v'sholuas Rabbi Yochanan, they came to ask Rabbi Yochanan how, if there's any way they can carry it into a place where it could be protected, because, you know, this diskia, which is full of mos, is in it's in the middle of a highway. It's going to get taken. So Amalehem, so Rav Yochanan said, in such a case, because of Hefseid, then you're allowed to put a kikar, a tinok on it, and then you can carry the sock into a mokom ha-mishtame. And once again, we're going to say that this tiltul, in the case of Hefseik, what we want to do is, it's not just that he can, you know, carte blanche, carry the diskia, but rather he's got to carry it two amos and then take a Hefseik and carry it another two amos, because he's got another problem here, and that is, in addition to mukta, which let's say he could circumvent with the kikar tinok, he's got an iser of carrying something for Amos and Rishus HaRab. So that's going to have to be implemented in a way where he stops every two Amos. That Isur, by the way, has nothing whatsoever to do with Mukta. It wouldn't make any difference whether it was Mukta or not. And Kikar Atino, by the way, is not going to help you, because that's only going to help you in Mukta. It's not going to help you in Otsah. So therefore, he's got to make sure that he stops every two amos in Rishus HaRab. Omar Mar Zutra Hilchas HaKechol HaNishmaitita. We paskin like all these halachas that we brought here, that you could be metaltel mukta through kikar or tinok, but only b'shocheach. That's only if he forgot the mukta in a place that's in a mishtamer, it's has no security, it's totally vulnerable, and he wants to take it into a mokom a mishtamer. But if he put it there midaito, they're not going to allow any flexibility to relax the laws of tiltul mukta by putting on a kikar tino. But although that's the opinion of Mar Zutra, Luchumra, but Rav Ashi's mekil, he says, afilu shachach, oh no, I'm sorry, Rav Ashi wants to go even more Luchumra, I should say, afilu shachach, even in the case where he forgot that this mukta was placed in a way that's any mishtamir, namilo, we're also not going to be matirit tiltul with kikar tinok, but when did they say kikar tinok? Ella lemeis bilvat. The only case that we're going to allow tinok or kikar is only mishum kavod abrius kavod mes. If you have to carry the corpse from one place to another and it's mukta, so then you can put on a kikar tinok. That is the chumra of Rav Ashi. Whereas Mar Zutra before him would allow you to move anything with kikar tinok as long as you didn't deliberately put it in a place that's any mishtarma, just that you forgot where it is. Gemara tells the following minog of Abai and Rav Abai, Manach Kapa Akipe. Okay, now we're talking about a kaf, which is a kind of a large spoon. And where did they put it? On top of omrim, sheaves of grain that had been harvested, and they're mukta. And by putting the spoon on top of the grain, they were able to move the grain. So clearly, Abai and Rava's minhag was more like Mar Zutra, but it seems to be even more mekel than Mar Zutra, because we're talking about meniach. He did it deliberately. Oh, maybe it means on Shabbos itself, when he realized that he's got to take away these omrim, then he can deliberately put a instead of a kikar or tinok, in this case a kaf. Rava, he has a slightly additional minog, and that is manach sakina abar yona. He would place a knife on a raw piece of meat and then move the meat. Okay, umetaltala, and then he's allowed to move the meat. Now, when Rav Yosef hears about this, Omer Rav Yosef, kama charifa shmaitata didardiki, which literally is an idiomatic stage, how sharp are the teaching of these youngsters? I think he's being facetious. He's telling them that they think they're sharpos, and they want to utilize this heter of kikar atinok to transport mukta. In other words, with all due respect to their sharpness, but it's not so. It's also what they're doing. The Emor Domer Rabbanan, when did the Rabbanan say that you're allowed to be metal to mukta by putting a kikar tinok on top of the mukta? That's only v'shocheach. So even if I take Mar Zutra's kula against Ravashi and apply it straight across the board, not just to a corpse of a mess for Kovan Abrios, but nevertheless, we have to accept Mar Zutra's stipulation and condition. It's got to be Shocheach. But L'chadchila, if he didn't forget it, and he left it deliberately in a place that's Einu Mishtamer, then Mi Omar, are we going to allow this heter of Tinok the Kikar? How did Abai V'Rava place something mukta deliberately, and now he's going to add, or he meaning he Abai or he Rava going to add some dover muta on top of it? So again, it's not the way I wanted to interpret it, that Abai Rava were only talking about a case where he mistakenly left the omrim, cut the omrim, the cut omrim, and now on Shabbos he puts the kaf. But rather, he had deliberately cut down the omrim, knowing full well that they would be mukts on Shabbos, and yet the kaf can be placed on top of it, like the kikar tinok, and we don't have this requirement of shocheach. And Abai now says, "I'm Abai Lav the Odom Choshev Ano." No, it's even though I'm an Odom Choshev, and we've discussed on many occasions that an Odom Choshev has to be machmir in front of the public, that they shouldn't derive from him by imitating him kulas and isurim. But if not for that, then kapa kipe lomali. Why should I have to put a kaf on top of the omrim in order to be matir tiltal chazul and mizgal layu? I can use them as a sort of a tablecloth and eat on top of them, these omrim, and they're not mukta. In other words, we were assuming that omrim are food to be eaten, and obviously in this state they're not fit for human consumption, and therefore they're mukta. But now we can say, forget about eating them, let's just use them for another purpose, in this case, lemizgalayhu. We'll set up some sort of a shulchan, so to speak, and we'll use this as a tablecloth. Pavetz, if not that I was an Olam Chashuv and I wasn't worried about the people misunderstanding my actions and coming to extend their heter for something that's mukt. Omar Rav, Anah Ilav, the Olam Chashuv Anah, Sakina Abar Yona Lomeli, Hachazi Lilumta. I don't have to put a knife on top of a raw piece of meat in order to allow tiltil of the raw piece of meat. The raw piece of meat is edible, and it's not muktzah. Again, I don't know biologically, you know, what kind of meat is edible raw. I just don't know, but anyway, that's the premise. So it's only because Rav is an Olam Chashuv and he's afraid people mistakenly imitate him and think that there's a heter of tiltul muktzah, therefore he had to put a sock in on top of the bar yonah. So now the Gemara analyzes the words of Rava. Taima, the reason why Rava said that basar chai is not muktzah is because chazilumta, he can eat it while it's raw. Holo chazilumta, if let's say it wouldn't be edible raw, lo, he would not be matir to metaltal it. And even though a cat would eat, you know, grab this meat and eat it up, but since this meat is expensive meat and he designates it for Achilas Adam when he's going to cook it or fry it or roast it later on, I mean after Shabbos, of course, therefore it's not Muchan L'Achilas Bali Chaim. But if it would have been Muchan L'Achilas Bali Chaim, it wouldn't have been Muktzah, even if it's not edible for human consumption. But this is something that was designated for human consumption, but it's not yet edible. And in such a case, even though, so you know, Rav would not have to have gone a step further and said, well, I could eat it raw. He could have just said, I'll feed it to my cat, but it wasn't designated as Michael Behema. So Gemara asks the question, Lemeimar, did Rav Krab Yehuda Svirale? Which means that something that is royal achilas adam is not considered muhan lebalei chayim, and that's going to be Rabbi Yehuda's sheet at the end of Masechta Shabbos in the case of behema that became nevela on Shabbos. It died, and Rabbi Yehuda holds it's also a tiltil, even though you can feed it to your dog or to your cat. But at the time that you entered into Shabbos, it was alive, and you thought you would shecht it after Shabbos and feed it for human consumption, not for Bali Chayim. So therefore, it's considered muktzah for the entire Shabbos because he intended it to be human consumption. And now it's gone down in Madriga. When it dies, you can't do Shechitas Nevela to animal consumption. So shall we assume that Rava, because he went out of his way to teach us that he could eat raw meat, and that's why technically it's not muktzah, and it's not enough for him to say, well, I'm not going to eat raw meat, but I can feed it to my cat. That's because Rava holds like Rabbi Yehuda, and if basically you're talking about raw meat, then raw meat is designated for Achilas Adam, and therefore the Hachana for Achilas Behema is non-existent. There's no Hachana for Achilas Behema. In fact, the Gemara Ba'amar Rav L'Shamei, Rav told his servant, his second-in-command, on Yontif, Tevili Bar Avaza Ushti Me'el L'Shunra, go and roast a duck and throw it to a cat. Now he says v'hashlich es me'ov, so we have the duck itself and now we have like the kishkis, and he says, you know, give that to feed the chatul, the cat. Now on Yotav we don't generally eat the kishkis, this me'ayim part. He has other parts that he can eat. And yet Rava allowed you to be metaltel the kishkis of this duck that was shechted for the animal, for the cat. So we see that Rava holds that if you have something that could be eaten by an animal, Roy Lamachal In other words, even though it could be eaten by a human being, but he wants to give it now to an animal, it's considered muchan. It's not muktza. So why, again, did Rav, in the case of tilta basar chai, have to hinge it upon the fact that he could eat it? Forget about the fact that he could eat it, even though it's designated for human consumption, but since it's roy for animal consumption, it has a din of hachana le bal chai, and that's enough. Just like Rav said, in the case of the Shammai, his second-in-command, when he told him to roast this duck and feed the Me'ayim to the Chatul. So the Gemara answers, that's not a kasha, why? Chosam. In the case of the Kishkis, of the Me'ayim, of the duck, which he's allowing to feed to the cat, Kevan de Masrach, since if he places them away till after Yontif, it will get ruined, it'll get spoiled. Is daiti loyem esmol. Already on Erev Yontif, his intention was to feed it to the cat, because he's not going to be able to leave it till after Shabbos. So it's ready muchan going into Yontif for the Baal Chai, for the cat. And therefore, even according to Rabbi Yehuda, this is not considered mukta. Achinam yistavro, that Rava Rabbi Yehuda sfirle, Rava agrees with Rabbi Yehuda, the Darsh Rava, ishlo tikanes lebeis ha'etim litol mehen ud. A woman should not go into the storehouse where they keep the wood in order to take an ud. Ud is a shpud, eitz. So you're talking about a long pole that they use as a shipud, also known in English as a spit, and it's used for chitug yecholim inside the oven. You have to sometimes poke the charcoal, and the eitzim are generally speaking omdim lehasaka, but not for chitui, and you're not allowed to be metaltalim if it's not omid lekach, and that's why Rava said, don't take the shpud eitz in order to poke your gecholim, because this was designated for fuel and not as a shpud eitz lachtos bos hagecholim. And then Rava said, ud, in the case of a shpud eitz that is set aside before Yontif for chitui gecholim in the tanur shenishbar, and then it breaks on Yontif, osur lasiko b'yontif. You can't use this broken pole that was designated as a shipud eitz for gecholim and throw it into the fire. Lefi shemasikim b'yontif rak b'kelim v'yemasikim b'shivrei kelim. So although you're allowed to take a full, complete utensil, which is not muktza, and you're allowed to move it and throw it into the fire on Yontif, but if you have shivrei kelim, which broke on that very day, so at the moment of knisas yom tov, they were kelim, but in Yontif, now they have a whole new function, and they became broken kelim. Is then it becomes muktzah. Shmamina, we see clearly that Rava holds like Rabbi Yehuda, that in these cases it would be osur b'toras muktzah. Rav Shimon, for example, would be matir, because he's more mekil in muktzah. And this leads us to the Mishnah on Daf Kuf Mem Gimel Amud Aleph, which is about seven lines down from the top. Beishamai Omrim Ma'avirim Yal Shulchan. You're allowed to take with your hands from the table at Somos. These are very hard bones that cannot even be fed to a kelev, uklipasam, and even the shells of walnuts that cannot be eaten by an animal. And there's no Isa Tiltul Mukta. And Beishamai, to our surprise, on Mekel over here. Well, Beis Hillel Omrim, Beis Hillel say, no, you're not allowed to take them by hand, because it's tiltum muktzim. It's salikas hatavla kula. He can take the entire platform, so to speak, which is on top of his table, where he has the Eitzim and Klipos Munachim, Umenara, and he's allowed to shake them off. So he takes off the Atzamos with the Tavla, because the Tavla is called a Kli, and it's not Mukta. So here we have a case in which Beit Shammai are the Mekilim, and Beis Hillel says no, he's not allowed to take the bones or husks by hand, he's allowed to only move the table, shake it clean, and again we're talking about, as we said before, bones and nutshells that are too hard for being fit, they're not even fit for animal consumption. And Beit Shammai will allow you to take these off the table because they don't accept mukta in this particular case. They hold like Rav Shimon, who has a very narrow scope for mukta, and therefore these bones and husks would not be mukta. So you have to know exactly why. Is it because going into Yontif they were mukta, or is it because going to Shabbos, I should say, or is it because these bones and husks have some sort of function? Beis Hillel, on the other hand, are reflecting the Shita of Yehudu as a wider Iser Mukta, and anything is considered Mukta unless you are making it, and the bones and shells cannot be moved directly because you aren't making them. But if you want to do a tiltum and atzad by handling just the table board, which is not mukta, it's a kli, and shaking off the mukta of the bones, that they still would accept. Now Tosfos has a problem. Beit Shammai, who's permitting taking these bones by hand, or the nutshells by hand, even though they're not unfit for use, Tosfos says even Rav Shimon would agree that this is mukta machmas gufa. It's like eggs and vavonim, it's like stones, it has no function whatsoever. So in order to defend Rashi, because Tosfos is going to deal with soft bones and fruit peels, Pnei Yehoshua offers the following. He says that in the very next part of the Mishnah, the Mishnah is going to single out certain items that can be moved because they're fit for animals. And this point was omitted here, and therefore Rashi concluded that in this clause, the first clause of the Mishnah dealing with bones and shells, we're talking about something that's not fit for animals. But if you ask what's the underlying theory of Beis Shammai to permit you to remove these bones and husks from the table, then we're going to have to apply the principle of graf shel rei, that you're allowed to remove some mukta that is repulsive. And to keep these, you know, these bones on the table, that's really disgusting. So Beit Shammai would allow in such a case, but the reason why Beis Hillel are machmir is because they follow Rabbi Yehuda's chumrah, and they hold that you can just do this tiltum and atzad. Again, maybe it's a little less comfortable, but just instead of handling the muksa directly, just simply as a graf shel rei, will let you pick up the boards, the table boards, and shake them clean. Next, mavirim me'ala shulchan peirurim, you have small crumbs of leftover pas, and they have a shear of pochos mikizayis, which you and I would have thought that it's so insignificant it should be like mukta, it should be mukta machmas gufo. No, you're allowed to move it out even though it's less than a kizayis. V'chein ma'virin se'ar shalafunim, so we have these beans, and they have these husks that cover these beans, they're called afunim. I mean, the kidneys, the beans themselves are called afunim. We call them peas. And you're allowed to take off the table the sayer of the afunim, right? It's like the shells of a nut, like, or the peels, in this case, of peas. And sa'ar adoshim, also the husks of other legumes, in this case, adoshim, which we call lentils. And the heter for all, in all these cases, neshu machal beima, because going into Shabbos, he already designated his mind that Seyar shalafunim or Seyar shaladoshim is fit for animal food. And that's what he had in mind. And again, you might ask, which animal is going to eat these small crumbs? The answer is tarnagolim. So the chickens will eat it. Now, in the case of pirurim, it could very well be that someone might gather together pirurim and eat them, even though they're very small pirurim. You know, I'm reminded of the Gemara Pesachim about whether or not you have to do a bedikas chametz to get rid of pirurim. Agav, maybe it's agav beise mitra. You know, that's who you're over there at the beginning of Pesachim. Okay, now what's the deal with a svog, a sponge, which is made of wool? And it absorbs water. And the question is, the svog, can you use it for washing your tablecloth? Is it mutter betiltul? And we're going to also address another question, whether it's makabel tuma. So the Gemara says the following. I mean, the Mishnah says the following. If he has a handle that's attached to this svog, right? This is very common today. You have, you have these kind of little mini squeegees, if you know what I mean. But it has a svog, some sort of a sponge, and it's attached to a leather handle. I'm not sure if it has to be leather. But then you're allowed to wipe the table with this sponge. Mekanchim bo'es tavos hashulchan. Lav. But if you're holding on directly to the sponge, it doesn't have a handle, then ein mekanchim bo. Then we're not allowed to use this sponge to clear off the table. Because you're going to have to hold it directly. And as it absorbs liquids, when you're cleaning off the table, it's going to be nischat. It's going to be squeezed. The liquid would squeeze out from between his fingers. That's how it works with a sponge. If you've ever held on to a sponge that's full of liquids. However, the chachamim omrim, again, the Bach takes out the words chachamim omrim, and he claims that even the Rashi and Tosfos, the Rif, they don't have Chacham Omrim. The Rambam Pirush Mashai certainly has Chachamim Omrim. Is Benkach uBenkach Nitol B'Shabbos. The Chacham say that even in a case where it has no handle to it, you can still use it to wipe the table. Even though it's damp, even though it's got moisture in it. And he can take it out on Shabbos. However, I just want to add here a note when he says that benkach ubenkach nitol, then it's a little complicated. Let's say there are two ways of understanding this nitol b'shabbos. Are we saying that Enochinami, the sponge has the status of a klishim latol iser, but he's allowed to move it on Shabbos, litzorch gufo or litzorch makomo? Or perhaps, are we saying that this is not called a kli shemalachto le'isur, which we're allowed to move l'tzokuf l'tzom komo, because it's dry. And while it's dry, it's roy, it's fit for use as a, you know, as something to clean, and therefore it's a kli shemalachto le'heter, and you're allowed to use it whenever you have any tzorech. But you don't need l'tzokuf l'tzom komo. So these are two different ways of interpreting the Chachomim. So if it's a dry sponge, and we're not afraid in this scenario, that it'll come to squeeze, absorb liquid and squeeze, then it's mutavitiltul because it's a kli. And that's the sheet of the Chachomim. So whereas the Tanakama requires as a precondition that the Svog have a base achiza, otherwise we're worried about schita, the Chachamim say that the issue here is not does it have a handle or does it not have a handle. I'll grant you it doesn't have a handle, but nevertheless it's mutabitiltul in a case of a Svog Yavesh when there's no chashash of schita. And the reason why it is not muktzah is because it's a kli. And although it has the status of a kli shemalachto le'isur, but there's no gzera here in the case of a dry svog, and we're not afraid that it'll make the switch between a dry and a wet, sponge. Okay, now the Chachamim give us another insight, that even though the Sfog has the status of a Kli, nevertheless, Eino Mekabel Tumah. And why is that so? Because Tumah in the Torah only applies to a Kli Eitz, or Beged, or Or, or Sak, or Mateches. So you have these various categories of Kabbalah's Tumah in the Torah, and Sfog does not fit into any of them. Even though Sfog is considered a Kli, and that's why you were allowed to be metaltal it, but as far as Kabbalah's Tumah is concerned, it's not considered a Kli, because it's not one of the various five categories of Kalim that are listed in the Mishnah. I mean, in the Torah. For example, Kli Eitz, or a Beged, or a Sak, or in the Parsha of Tumah Sheretz, in Vayikra Yud Aleph, V'chol Asher Yipol Olav Mehem V'Bosom Yitma Mikol Kli Eitz O Beged O Or O Sak, and a metal keli, in terms of tumah, is derived from the parasha of Milchemes Midyan, where the Torah says, at the end of Bamidbar, Ach Es Hazahav Yes Hakesef Yes Hanachoshes O Barzel Ves Abdil Ves Ofar, is called Dover Ashiyov Beish Tavir Beish V'Toher Ach V'Meini Do Yischato. So the psukim indicate that kli matochos hamakabel tumah min haTorah, and therefore you need yischata, you need to tavir v'mayim. And in the case of a svog, guess what? It doesn't fit into any of these categories, and therefore it's not makabel tumah, despite the fact that it's a kli, and it's not mukta. Now the Gemara goes back to Beit Shammai. Beit Shammai at the beginning of our Mishnah says that you're allowed to clear off the bones and the husks from the table and do it directly with your hand. And Beit Shammai says, no, you have to do it indirectly by lifting up the tavla, we'll call it the table, or the tablecloth, and being menayer, and shake it off. So according to Beit Shammai, clearly, you're allowed to be metaltel, Atzomos uklipos me'al shulchan. There's no iser tiltul mukta. They still say that there is an iser mukta, and his only option is to shake the tavla under which the atzomos and klipos are resting, are munachim. Amar Rav Nachman, ein lanu, anu ein lanu. We don't rely on the Mishnah as it's written, Ella, the way we heard it from our Rabosa, meaning in our transmission of the Torah, it's just the opposite. Buchlefes Hashita, Beit Shammai are the ones who are Machmir, Beit Hillel are the Mekil, because Beit Shammai, Sovrim Kir, Rabbi Yehuda, and they accept the Yisur Tiltul Muktza in a very broad scope. Anything, as we said before, that wasn't deliberately prepared is Mimela, by default is Muktza. And therefore, to take the Atzomas and the Klipos off the table directly, Beit Shammai prohibits it because of the Shita of Yehudin Muktza. And its only way out is through to remove the Tavla, where the bones and so forth are sitting, and shake it out. Beis Hill hold like Rabbi Shimon, and Rabbi Shimon is Matir Tiltul Muktza, except for very narrow, specific cases. So according to that, then Yochel Lahavir Es Atzomas VaKlipos BiYadayim Mi'al HaShulchan. If we're holding like Rabbi Shimon, that there's no Iser Tiltul Muktza with regard to these bones and so forth, then he can take them out of the Shulchan. And that he would be allowed to do directly, and that's what we thought originally was Beit Shammai Shita, but now we find out it's Beis Hillel. So this comforts us a little bit, because maybe exaggerating, but 99 out of 100 cases, Beis Hillel is the Mekil and Beit Shammai is the Machmir. And now once we add the Mukhlefes HaShita here, that's exactly what we have in our case as far as Tiltul Muktza. The Mishnah says, Ma'avir me'al shulchan perim, even if these crumbs are less, they amount to less than a kezias, it's machal behem. Misayel le Rav Yochanan d'amar Rav Yochanan perim, she'em behem kezias, osur li abdom biyad. Notice you can't throw them by hand, because we have a principle of Ma'avir me'al shulchan perim, that we have to treat with respect that which is still food. And if you read the Mishnah carefully, Ma'avirim me'al shulchan perurim, it doesn't say zorkim perurim. We can't be mezalzel in these perurim just because they're less than a kezias, but rather in a more edel way, badinut ma'avirim me'al shulchan. Not zorkim perurim, but ma'avirim perurim me'al shulchan. And that's what Rabbi Yochanan means when he says Osli Abdon Biyodayim. It still has the status of an Ochel. It's again admittedly an Ochel from Behema, but it has the status of an Ochel, and we don't mess around with Ochel. We have to treat it with great respect. So therefore Osli Abdon Biyodayim. Many people that I know, especially may rest in peace Shmuel Lieberman all of Hashem, he used to be very makbid to collect the pirurim and feed them to the birds. And that would be a mitzvah of a tzar bali chaim, of feeding the birds. That would not be ibud biyadayim. There would not be a zilzul in the covet for these pieces of crumbs. Now, in the case of Tiltul Muktza, the Gemara asks Mani, who is the author of our Mishnah? And the Gemara says, without doubt, Rabbi Shimoni de Lesle Muktza. And therefore, if you remember the case of the beans or the peas and the lentils, that you remove the sharvitin, you know, those husks that cover these lentils and beans, you're allowed to be metaltal them. And that reflects the sheet of our Mishnah and the sheet of Rabbi Shimon de Lesle Muktza. But Rabbi Yehuda prohibits tiltul. Why? Because on Erev Shabbos, this was not omeid l'machal behema. And this is a little bit different than the way we understood it. We thought you're allowed to take off these husks, because even going into Shabbos, he intended to feed these husks to an animal. And now Rabbi Yehuda is saying no, because going into Shabbos, he was going to eat the peas, or the beans, or the lentils, and he would eat the husks with them. If I'm not mistaken, lentils in a cholent, they leave the outside covering of the lentil, and it becomes cooked. So now in Shabbos, when ha'ochel nilkach mihen, omdim he'rak l'machol behema, v'nechshovim kinolad shu muktza v'osur b'tiltul. So what does it mean here, kishe ha'ochel nilkach mihen? It means he separated the lentil, the beans itself, which is edible from its chaff, from its husk. And the husk, now, in the middle of Shabbos, became, once you separate the beans, became omdim l'machol behema. And that's called nolad, which is another form of muktzah, and it's also betiltel. So it means that even though our Mishnah reflects the Shita of Shimon in terms of allowing you to move the husks and so forth of these legumes, whereas Rabbi Yehuda would prohibit you, we understand the logic of Rabbi Yehuda in this case, because to say that these were prepared, that these were Muchan Mi'er of Shabbos, I mean, that would make sense if he would eat the husks together with the food. But now that he's just separating the food and he's eating only the bean itself, the legume itself, and he wants to take the covering and the husk for Michael Behema, that's considered Nola. That's Muktz. So the Gemara asks the following kash, if that be the case, then Amos Sefer. Right? We're now saying that this Seir Shalafunim, Seir Adashim, is not Muksa because it's Machal Behema, and that reflects the Shita of Rabbi Shimon. If that be the case, what are we going to do with the Sefer? Sfog. It says that if you have this moist sponge that has some sort of element or volume of liquid that was absorbed in the sponge, im yesh lo beis achiza mekanchem bo v'im lav ein mekanchem bo. And that seems to reflect the Shita Ason ki Rabbi Yehuda. The Rabbi Yehuda, the Omar Dover Shein Miskavin Osur. So if he doesn't have a handle and he takes the sfog, the sponge, this wet sponge that has liquid absorbed, and he takes directly in his hands, then if we allow him to clean off whatever he's cleaning off with that sponge, then even though he doesn't have kavodah for schita, he's going to do schita. So the reish of our Mishnah, with regard to the Sharvitim of Shalafunim, or Shaladash, that reflects the Shita of Shimon. And the Sefer represents the Shita, or reflects the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda, requiring a Beis Achiza in order to be Mater Lekaneach Bo, because even though he doesn't have Kavonet to Shita, but nevertheless, Rabbi Yehuda holds Dover Shenim is Kavin is also. So how do we reconcile this discrepancy between the Reish and the Sefer? Tzumari answers that really the entire Mishnah from A to Z reflects the Shita of Shimon Ubaha, and in this case in the Sefer of a Sfog, that this sponge that is absorbed with Lachus in it, and it doesn't have a handle, even Rab Shimon, Afil Rab Shimon Moda, Dabai Rav Diyomi Shavai Moda Rab Shimon Besikreish of Lo Yomus. Even if he doesn't have kavanah for schita, we have no doubt, it's absolutely predictable, that he will be sochet. It's like the case where he chops off the head of an animal and he says, well, it's not going to die. I didn't have any kavanah that should die. I have another purpose in cutting off the head. But we know that a chicken, when its head is cut off, it's inevitable that it'll die. And that's considered as if he had kavanah to kill the chicken, which is one of the 39 malachas, Netilas Neshama, here too. When he does the kinuach with a sfog that doesn't have a beis achiza, we have no doubt, no question, we are absolutely certain that he's going to do some schita, and therefore, even if it's a miskavi, but it's a psikresha, and even Rav Shimon would agree. So the whole Mishnah, from beginning to end, reflects the shita of Rabbi Shimon. So let's continue more about food that's fit for animals. Hani garinim de tamre aramayasa. So we have the pits of the special dates that come from Armenia, and the dates themselves are not really very tasty, but the pits themselves are omdim l'maichel behema. They're fit for animal consumption. Shari l'teltelinu. There's no Isur Muktzah, you're allowed to be metal to them, hol v'chazion agav imon. And that means that already on Erev Shabbos, they were fit for animal fodder. Agav, the Tamarim themselves, because although the Tamarim in this case are Ra'im, and the Ochel on top of these pits can be separated from the pits, but nevertheless it's considered Omed L'Maichel Behema, and it's not Muktza. And the pits are Muchan Agav Iman, Agav the Peros, the dates themselves. So Armenian dates are of poor quality. The dates themselves are used as fodder. At the onset of Shabbos, the dates, including their pits, were prepared for the use of animals. If the pits were separated from the fruit on Shabbos, they remain fit for the purpose for which they originally had been prepared Erev Shabbos, namely for Michael Behema. And it's not called Nolad, nothing has really changed over here. So therefore you're allowed to move it, be metaltal it, and that would be true even according to Rabbi Yehuda, who asks Mukta. Udefar Sahoisa. Okay, what are these Far Sahoisa? These are pits of the Parsium, of the Persian dates, Osir. Those pits cannot be moved on Shabbos, because on Erev Shabbos, the dates were set aside and designated for human consumption, and that includes the pits. Even though, again, he would feed the pits to the animals, but the dates themselves, with the pits inside, are prepared for use of humans. And now we're going to Rabbi Yehuda that something that was prepared for humans is muchan le'adam, ena muchan le'behema. It's not considered prepared for the animals. So therefore, when the pits are separated from the fruit on Shabbos itself, now they're designated for animal fodder, they're considered nolad. And that's why you're not allowed, according to Yehuda at least, to move the pits on Shabbos. Shmuel mitaltalahu agav rifta. As far as these garidim, these pits of the dates on Shabbos, Shmuel would eat the dates on Shabbos, and then he would carry away the garinim, the pits, agav rifta, with a piece of lechem. So although he was very careful not to carry the pits themselves directly, but he would carry them agav lechem. And the Gemara says, Shmuel etameh, Shmuel is consistent. The Omer Shmuel, back on Daf Nun, he said, Osa Adam called Tzarko v'pas. A person is allowed to do whatever he wants to do with pas. He could use it in any way. Even if he wants to crush it and put it into a cholent, into a pot of cooked food. And that's not considered bizoyin l'pas, because he's going to eat it and it doesn't become disgusting. So even though he's putting these pits on top of the lechem, you might think that that's considered bizoyin apas, but it's not, because he will still be able to eat the lechem. Rabba mitaltalahu agav lakana demaya. When it came to the pits of these dates, Rabba's minig was to move the pits with a sephel of mayim. In other words, he would pour the pits or place the pits into, from his mouth, into a sephel of water, and he was metaltil the sephel shel mayim. Now, when he carries the bucket out with water, and agav the water, he's got the garinim, these pits that are muktza. This would seem, at the face of it, to reflect the Shita Rabbi Shimon. Now, it says Rabba, but Tosis has a different girsa. He has the girsa of Rava. And if that be the case, then Rava, we happen to know, passings like Rabbi Yehuda. So this business of Agav Kana Demaya Not sure how that works out according to Rav Yehuda. Tzorech Iyud. Anyway, Rav Huna Breid Rav Yoshua Ovid Lehu Kigraf Shel Rei. In other words, Rav Huna wanted to activate another principle which would simply circumvent all the needs that we have for putting it agav this. We said agav pas in the case of Shmuel. Rabba or Rava said agav kana demaya. We don't need the agav rifta. We don't need the agav kana demaya, says Rav Huna. It's a graf shel rei, a whole different principle. And we spoke about, you know, a kli that has dirty diapers in it and so forth, so you're allowed to take it out to throw it in the waste bin. And here too, that if you collect all the pits that are in front of them, it becomes repulsive for you, and therefore you're allowed to pick them up and carry them out and feed them to an animal. So the Gemara asks the following question: Omalei Rav Ashi la Meimar v'chi osin graf shel rei l'chatchila. Okay, if you have a graf shel rei and it's a done deal, that's okay. But are you allowed to cause a dover mos b'kli l'chatchila to do it directly? And therefore, Rav Huna, by eating these dates and collecting the pits, he's deliberately creating a dover mos l'chatchila so that he could clear it off on the graf shel rei. But we only say b'dieved. If he is faced with this situation that's thrust upon him, that there's a dover mos in front of him, we're going to allow him to take it out. So that's the Gemara's kasha of Rav Ashi against Rav Huna's minuk. Rav Shesha Zarklu Belishne. Rav Shesha would throw these garine tmorim Bilshono, which is really, that's quite a feat to use his tongue and somehow toss these pits across the table, and they would go beyond the table. I'm not sure exactly where they fell into, but what it means is the Rav Sheshes would not handle the pits directly with his hands. He would sort of spit them beyond the table. And that's what it means with his tongue. Maybe it means he would spit them beyond the table. And Rav Papa Zarkle, he would throw the garina machore amita. He would throw them behind the table that he was eating from. Omer Olav Rabbi Zecharia ben Avkulus, Shoyev Machzir Ponov Lachore Amita. Vizarkan, that he would turn the other way, not facing the back of the mita that he was eating on, and he would throw the garinim of these tamarim there, so that he would not have to touch them, because since there's no food left on the pits, then it's also vital to be a diet. So turning his face behind the couch upon which he's reclining, he would toss the pits over there, again with his tongue, apparently spitting them out. Very similar to what we saw in Rav Papa. And again, the whole sugya here assumes that there's an iser being metal to the garini tmarim in a normal way. You have the following options: either you could move them agav pas, or agav sefel mayim, or you could throw them to the other side of the table or the mita. And some Rishonim say this is all according to Rabbi Yehuda, who has the Isur Tiltil Muktzah. La locha we pass like Rabbi Shimon, and there's no Tiltil Muktzah. It's Mutal Etaltil Garine Tmarim. And the Shulchan Aruch actually paskins that in a mokom, in a place, Machilino Sel Behema, Mutal Etaltil on. And the Mishnah Berurah writes that if we don't have any behemoths to feed, then it's also a taltalam, even though there are uyim lachilus behema. Hajan alecha notel adam es bino. And in Yirtz Hashem, tomorrow we'll begin the 22nd perek of Shabbos, Perek Chavis, which again, although it's called Chavis, it's really Chavis Shenishbarha, so let's not get excited about the Chavis. You know, the Chavis is a broken Chavis, and the question is, as it's, you know, as it's broken and the food or the liquid is pouring out, are you allowed to, or what are you allowed to do in order to save the food that's inside the Chavis? But then we'll have a lot about Schitas Peros and Chalz Dvash with Rasika, and a little bit more about the Sfog, you know, the sponge that we spoke about. So that hopefully will be a very exciting limud that will expand our horizons in the Sefer Shabbos.